children as capable of only holding one language, causing the suppression of these native languages. When my oldest brother was in kindergarten, his teachers told my parents to stop teaching him Tigrinya because it was taking him longer to learn to read and write in English. Since then, my other siblings and I were not taught our language like we should have been, and it hurts. Now, as a society, we are realizing the benefits of being multilingual, such as feelings of familiarity and comfort, knowledge of historical and cultural identity, and improved communication skills. Now, it's hard to say if the blossoming and recovering of mother languages will continue post-COVID. Probably, most kids will revert back to dominant languages once schools begin to open. But for now, it's brought light, it's brought warmth, and it's brought happiness to many families during a time of turmoil. And who knows? Maybe children will grow more confident in their second language and retain it. I made a promise to my grandfather, so I know this will be me.
Thanks for listening to the Noise Filter Daily Podcast. Dr. Derry and I have a daily show at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time where we go into more detail on stories and answer your questions about COVID-19.
You can find Doc Griggs at DocGriggs1 on social media, and you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at DRDERY. You can follow us at Noise Filter on Instagram, Noise Filter NOLA on Twitter, and for more information about us and the show, you can go to noisefiltershow.com. Hey, Doc Griggs, any last words?
Remember, get checked, get fit, get moving, and remember to get some rest.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of our lungs on www.kboo.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. During this pandemic, KBOO is still here to serve the community, and we need you to be there for us. If you're able, please go to kboo.fm/give. to make a contribution. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival from September 24th through October 1st, streaming online. The 2020 Portland Eco Film Festival features 30 films, a youth showcase, and interviews with the filmmakers. Again, that's the Portland Eco Film Festival from September 24th through October 1st, streaming online. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO FM. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just before we get started, I would like to let our listeners know that KBOO's fall membership drive, which would normally be going on right now, has in fact been canceled due to the ongoing pandemic. But now more than ever, volunteer-run, community-powered radio is a critically important free resource, providing much-needed information, entertainment, and a sense of connection to us all during this time of uncertainty and isolation. Since the membership drive has been canceled, this is the time to give. We aren't in the station to take your calls, but if you can, please show your support by going to kboo.org/give. If you've been waiting... until the membership drive to give, now is definitely the best time to show your support for KBOO and all the services we offer the community. And I would also like to just throw in a quick plug for the Labor Radio Podcast Network. We'd like to give a special shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show every month. So be sure to check them out at laborradionetwork.org, and you can hear old archived versions of this show as well as many other great labor-related podcasts from around the country. And so now I'd like to get into our actual topics for the evening. We are, once again, you know, have a lot to discuss, so we'll jump right into it. But tonight we're going to be discussing the recent strike of athletes, specifically within the NBA and the WNBA, but of athletes around all the major sports leagues in this country, in relation to the Black Lives Matter movement and the murder that happened by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin last month in August. So obviously, you know, for anyone who has not been aware of what's happening, the NBA, or led by the Milwaukee Bucks, the team from Milwaukee, the NBA team, and then it spread to the entire league, players within the NBA decided during the playoffs, right before major playoff games, to basically go on strike, take a wildcat strike, and not show up on the court and not play in order to figure out what they could do in, as their role as celebrities and athletes to affect real change against systemic racism and police brutality. It started, of course, as I mentioned, with the Milwaukee Bucks, who are the team closest to Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is where the most recent police murder took place of Jacob Blake. But it did spread very quickly to all the other NBA teams and the WNBA, and it even spread from there to Major League Baseball and to Major League Soccer and even the NHL. National Hockey League.
Yeah. I mean, but for the NBA, it was even a point of contention during the early, you know, portions of the restart. When the NBA was trying to figure out how to start their season, there was a ton of news cycles kind of around, you know, what are the owners or the board of governors going to do, about some of these kind of things that players cared about. And even then, some players opted out of partaking in the season itself.
Because they'd have to go into quarantine, a special bubble, essentially.
Yeah, and also I think that was part of it, but there's also kind of this sentiment around we want to stay focused on what matters. Mm-hmm. And so starting to play basketball again to some players felt like, you know, it wasn't kind of doing justice to George Floyd and other things like that.
And the movement that was taking place in the streets. And that, you know, so that was true when they restarted the season in July. And there were players that were vocally, particularly Kyrie Irving, but players that were vocally opposed to doing anything to distract from the movement. But once, you know, this most recent horrific murder took place and the new uprising, the new explosion of protest movements around the country took place, the players realized that, you know, they, from reports, you know, and interviews with the players, they basically were like, well, look, we're stuck here in this bubble, you know, away from our family and friends, away from our communities, and we're just sort of basically providing entertainment distraction for the country at a time when we don't feel like that is what we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so these players, led again by the Milwaukee Bucks, and specifically, you know, Milwaukee not only is the closest city to Kenosha where Jacob Blake was killed by the police, but also the Milwaukee Bucks have a player who just last season, Sterling Brown, he had a very rough run-in with the police in Milwaukee as well. And so it was very close to his own experience.
Yeah, I mean, and there's been multiple players too. Thabo Sefolosha also had his leg broken outside of a nightclub by police, in which later it was basically stated that he hadn't really done anything to deserve kind of such treatment. So, I mean, I think a lot of players across the entire league, especially ones who aren't instantly recognizable, are dealing with the same types of things that the entire BLM movement is talking about, right? Just because they're, you know, famous and make a lot of money doesn't mean that they're going to be treated any different by like the systemic issues that the rest of kind of their entire race face.
Yeah, like even though you may be a rich black person in this country, you are still a black person, and that is the way that the most law enforcement officers will see you. That'll be the first lens they see you through. I mean, that you were mentioning before we came on the air about Mo Harkless, a former Portland Trailblazer. After all this went down, made a social media post basically describing a situation.
Stating that he had been pulled over by a police officer during his kind of time on the Portland Trailblazers. And kind of he was asked, you know, whether or not the car that he was in was his and was kind of being dealt with in a manner that was, you know, somewhat uncomfortable. And once the officer took his ID and kind of looked him up, you know, his entire demeanor changed.
Right.
You know, and he said, thanks, Mo, like, good luck tonight.
Yeah.
And I think in itself right there kind of can state that, you know, despite these people being NBA players, like, this was a strike about kind of systemic issues, you know, facing a majority of the people inside their union, just like any other union.
Exactly. And so that sort of leads to, I think, I mean, obviously everything about this is very important, and it was a very momentous instance in this country, but I think the really important thing for, you know, the Labor Radio lens and for this show in particular is just the sort of idea that what this strike did, you know, this was, even though it was described as a boycott by the media, it was in fact a strike. And not only was it a strike, but it was a wildcat strike, which is the workers did not get pre-approval from their union before mm-hmm. deciding to withdraw their labor. They simply did it collectively and then, you know, then met with management to discuss what they were doing. And so I think that this experience, despite the fact that there may be criticisms from people on the right and left, you know, within the movement and outside, that like, well, these guys are rich and therefore they don't have, they are not working class and they are not, you know, advocates for working class issues. Yeah. It's not true because, I mean, that may specifically be true. They are rich, but like they are still the most prominent example of successful labor organizing that this country has really pays any attention to. I mean,
yeah,
sports and, labor unions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, right? Like, a lot of, I mean, this kind of, you know, like you said, Wildcat strike, it's not really privy to the same types of criticisms that even, you know, someone on the right could make towards a typical strike. Like, this wasn't about wage increases or better food inside of the kind right. of, you know, bubble that they've created.
Yeah.
They won real concessions from the owners or the board of governors, and they won them for like the generic population, not themselves, right?
Right.
One of the big key concessions that they won as part of this was to use all of the kind of land or the arenas that the board of governors uses to play the games in for voting.
Right.
Right. So yeah. That isn't something that they won and isn't going to increase any salary or some player at the end of the bench's salary or, you know, better food inside the bubble, like I said. These were like key concessions. And I think earlier, you know, we've touched on it in July, this was also, you know, a pretty big media narrative. And there were also key concessions won there too, you know, right? To put BLM on the courts
right, yeah.
Inside the bubble. And to also, you know, they're obviously pre-approved, so it wasn't a huge thing. But yeah, to put messages,
like 28 things.
Yeah, they put messages on the back of the jerseys based yeah. on whatever the players would like to do. Obviously, they were pre-approved.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are big things that aren't affecting kind of the things you can typically, you know, critique if you were an anti-union position.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, so more than, you know, as Elliot was just explaining, like this wasn't necessarily a fight for them specifically to gain concessions for their own workplace, but rather what it did, and I think this is the really important thing about what this strike showed to the larger labor movement in general, is that like it showed the place that labor has in injecting itself into this moment of turmoil and driving the country's narrative and the discussion in the right direction when it comes to, you know, systemic racism and injustice and police brutality, but also even, you know, in a larger sense towards basically our slide towards fascism that's happening right now. And so what, you know, what these players did was that they showed to the average sports viewer and the average, you know, non-political person's understanding, you know, people who watch sports maybe aren't always the most politically active or not, you know, that may not be what people are focused on, but what it did was bring to that arena the understanding of like the labor theory of value and basically yeah. the role that labor has to completely stop a workplace and to sort of call for massive change. And so in a way what these players did was issue a challenge to the labor movement at large, you know, the labor movement around the country, to get involved and to, you know, weigh in on these issues and, mm-hmm. and if necessary, withdraw their labor and strike in order to demand changes for everything from, you know, Black Lives Matter, but also to, you know, the non-functioning state of our country and our refusal to deal appropriately with the pandemic and all these things.
Yeah.
It basically just highlighted the role that labor has, that labor can play in these issues, and then also issued a challenge that labor now needs to stand up and back these guys and these athletes and these women and everyone who has done this in all the leagues, and to yeah. show our muscle, you know, around yeah. the country.
Yeah, I think it's really important to call out here that the WNBA has maybe not in 100% lockstep, but has been taking almost the same exact, sometimes in cases even more so,
absolutely,
than the NBA players. And I think it's important to call that out because most of the time the story is kind of revolved around just the NBA yeah. on its own.
Right. And like, of course, it, you know, the moment that it happened, it did start in the NBA, but it immediately was picked up by the WNBA players. And it even, you know, to a degree, they took it farther in the show of force. They all, you know, once they did finally return to play, all the athletes walked out onto the court wearing shirts that said Breonna Taylor or, you know, Jacob Blake. And they had images of bullet holes on their back, you know, to yeah. indicate the seven shots that Jacob Blake, that the police inflicted upon him. And so, you know, it's not only a show of symbolism, but it's also a show of labor force and of the power that the labor movement has if it were to get involved in these issues to sway things. And then on top of that, it also then provided, you know, it was interesting to watch your social media feeds or like, you know, local media coverage of this issue, because you were sort of seeing in real time people who were not necessarily political or economic, you know, reporters or thinkers or anything, start to understand the labor theory of value, start to understand, well, okay, so these workers, like, they can withdraw their labor and nothing can really be done to force them to work, and this now requires concessions. And so people were learning kind of in real time the language of the left and of labor organizing and the power that, that, you know, the role that unions have to play in this country. Yeah. And to provide strength for working people everywhere. So I think it was an important moment, you know, not only for the Black Lives Matter movement, but also for the labor movement. And the challenge has really been issued now to the labor movement in general to stand up and to stand with these athletes and to take the ball and run with it. Because it cannot only be solved by their union and by these athletes. It needs to be solved by labor in general and by, you know, working class people in general.
Yeah, and a sea change, like, in the just the kind of narrative across, you know, the entire country.
Exactly.
And, you know, one kind of thing we've been touching on a little bit tonight but haven't kind of fully dove into is that, you know, a lot of the times, you know, the audience that's watching the NBA, this is one of the kind of main times they're probably having to deal face to face with some of these issues, right? I think they hear about it or they read about it, but they aren't really, it doesn't come into their world,
exactly.
Right? I think one of the things that, you know, you can kind of say is, you know, if you've never experienced any of these things to yourself, it's kind of hard sometimes to exactly understand, you know, what goes into it and how affecting they can be. And so I think this is a really good way to, you know, get in front of, you know, an audience of people that maybe don't necessarily deal with or even think about these issues on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. And yeah, we tend to view things, you know, celebrity and specifically athletes, you know, we are very celebrity obsessed, and athletes and sports in general, and the NBA in particular, like, those athletes have a platform that almost no one else in this country has, and an ability to reach a section of the population that politicians can't necessarily reach and other, you know, intellectuals or anything can't reach. Like, the NBA and these athletes more generally are an amazing medium to get this message through. And the fact that they are, you know, athletes have historically always been, you know, when they stand up, people pay attention. And in this moment, you know, not only is it true right now, but back in March when there was hemming and hawing about whether we were going to deal with the coronavirus pandemic, the thing that really set off the shutdown throughout the entire country was the NBA shutting down their season. Like, they are the reason that everyone outside of, like, health experts and really political wonks just started to realize, like, oh, this is a big issue, because the NBA did it first.
Yeah.
And so sports is a lens that we understand the world through in this country. And so to, you know, to have this message of, you know, political activism and of labor organizing come through that medium, it just connects with an entire section of the population that would be totally disconnected from that otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I think we would be very surprised at the number of Americans who basically came to understand that, you know, the coronavirus was important by, you know, Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz getting it. You know, I think that was one of the first moments. And I think he made, you know, several mistakes there. And I think we started to see it across the board with other Americans, right? I mean, he didn't take it seriously in a press conference, you know, right before he tested positive. He was touching all the mics as a joke.
Right, that was pretty bad.
Not only did it introduce America to kind of the severity of the situation we were about to be in, but I think it right away probably helped people understand, like, oh, I can't, you know, not take this seriously.
Right.
And that's the power, like you said, that's the power that they have.
Because, we are celebrity obsessed, and if athletes do things, we pay attention. And, you know, so Dave Zirin, who hosts a great podcast for The Nation called The Edge of Sports, where he discusses sort of the clash of sports and politics, he wrote an article recently discussing this sort of wave of strikes across, you know, the the sports leagues. And he basically said that, you know, the strikes that went off, it raised the challenge to labor officialdom to no longer be on the sidelines in the fight for Black lives. And so that is really kind of the flag that this raised. It issued a challenge to labor in general that, like, we need to get involved and you know, more so than just encouraging people to vote, like, we need to get involved by potentially striking, withdrawing our labor, demanding things. And again, you know, these athletes bringing this to the forum that people most tend to watch, now people understand, or are starting to understand, like, yeah, okay, maybe these are issues that maybe my source of entertainment will not continue if I don't get engaged with these issues and start to find solutions for these and work together to find solutions. Because, you know, forever in this country, like, well, yeah, there may be protests happening, there may be this and that politically, but, like, the sports will still be there. The entertainment will still be there. But if, you know, so what these athletes did was basically say, like, no, if you want to continue to be distracted and have this form of entertainment, then you need to engage with us on this, on these topics, and actually start thinking about them and discussing them and taking action yourself before we'll give you this distraction back.
Yeah. And I think, too, I think the narrative around kind of labor and collective bargaining in sports in general has been changing, especially over the last decade or so, in that I think that you would have seen in the early 2000s and kind of before that, that, you know, typically during a lockout or a strike, the kind of the working class actually tends to side with ownership,
right?
In that they kind of have their value or their, not their value, but they have their loyalty kind of driven from the team,
yeah,
as opposed to the players that are on it, right? Like, when a player leaves, you get a new jersey because you want the same team with a new player. So I think that too is slowly starting to change as you see, you know, players have a lot more freedom of movement in terms of, you know, the types of contracts and the deals that they sign. So kind of everything that you're touching on, all of this stuff is kind of converging in a lot of interesting ways, you know, for something to kind of happen. And that's exactly what we saw, right? So all of this stuff is kind of coming together on top of, you know, the year that has been 2020. Kind of create a scenario where this could occur.
Exactly. And it is interesting, you know, obviously it's a different league, but, like, I you have to imagine that a lot of this would not have necessarily happened had Colin Kaepernick not done what he did.
Oh, definitely.
You know, a few years ago by kneeling in the NFL. And obviously that led to him being officially blackballed by unofficially blackballed by the league. And, you know, he has yet to be brought back in despite being arguably a better quarterback than a lot of the guys who are doing the job and for different teams. But, like, his efforts raised awareness for other athletes that, like, oh, actually, we do have a platform. And if we do this together as opposed to individually, there is a lot more power behind that and people will listen. And so, yeah, basically, you know, I think the larger message is that around what has happened with the NBA and with the leagues at large is that these strikes are beneficial for the labor movement because this is such a celebrity-obsessed culture, and the athletes' actions successfully captured Americans' imagination about the possibilities for change brought about by labor strikes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's now up to the rest of us, the rest of the working class, to move forward with this challenge, this gauntlet laid down by the athletes, specifically in the WNBA and the NBA. You know, there have been efforts to co-opt what happened, and, you know, that is always going to be the case, you know, whereas it initially started as a wildcat strike, very quickly management, you know, linked arms and President Obama communicated with LeBron and the Players Association and, you know, steered them, convinced them to continue playing and steered them towards electoralism and things like that. But, you know, it wasn't going to always be just these athletes. It wasn't going to be up to them. They lit the fire, and it is now up to the rest of the movement to really move forward with this and to, if we see that this country is non-functioning, and it, I think it pretty clearly is at this point, then it's up to labor to withdraw its value from the system, withdraw its power. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you have to give kind of some credit to the players for all of this stuff too, right? Like, not every single player in the league is a LeBron James.
Right.
There are plenty of people at the end of the bench
exactly
who aren't making nearly as much as you would think. And, you know, are sitting in these tax brackets and are probably dealing, you know, with their own kind of lives and bills and things. So to kind of stay united throughout the entire thing is, I think you got to give them some credit.
I think that's such an important point, too, because exactly like you said, I mean, yeah, it's one thing for a LeBron James or a Kyrie Irving or someone.
A financially stable person to
like
be able to.
One of the richest people in their league, you know. But, like, it is another thing entirely for, and this is true in the NBA, but it's also especially true in, like, the NFL and the MLB. Like, these leagues where there are more players and players on the bad end of the spectrum get paid a lot less.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is, but the average kind of career of a basketball player is most likely quite short, and you're trying to earn all of the money you're going to need in your entire life in like a 3 to 4 year period, which is not typical.
Right.
So sort of work stoppage that's going to result in no pay, it isn't something that you can just easily do when you're trying to earn kind of an entire career's pay in that amount of time, especially if you've left college early and now you've kind of given up some of these kind of ability for you to maybe get a higher, wage job after your career.
Exactly. And, you know, like on top of all this, there was so the players came together in this moment in the couple days while they were off, and they discussed what the plan was to move forward, and they held a vote about whether or not they should continue playing the season, and two of the teams and a number of the players voted to not continue, which would have definitely hurt them financially. This is a conversation that we will absolutely continue, but we'd just like to take a quick break here. If you're just tuning in, this is Labor Radio on KBOFM. Thank you for joining us. We are discussing the labor strikes that took place in the NBA and WNBA and other leagues across this country in order to stand up for Black lives. But before we jump back into that conversation, I just want to let our listeners know that KBOO's fall membership drive would normally be taking place right now, but it has been canceled due to the pandemic. Now more than ever, volunteer-run, community-powered radio is a critically important free resource, providing much-needed important information, entertainment, and a sense of connection to all of us during this time of uncertainty and isolation. The membership drive may be canceled, and we are unable to take your calls, but if you are interested in giving, we please ask that you go show your support at kboo.org/give. That will help us tremendously to continue providing this resource to the community, and we would very much appreciate your support. So please consider going to kboo.org/give to show your support for the station here. Just jumping back into our conversation about the NBA player strike and the WNBA player strike and, you know, just generally the athletes strike. I think
I think, you know, the kind of moral of the story here is that because the NBA players were able to kind of stick together and kind of collectively bargain, but to kind of get some key concessions out of the Board of Governors, you know, we are back to playing NBA games now, as most people are aware. But I think there was a key conversation and some key wins, you know, which we've touched on, especially in terms of getting voting places in arenas and things like that. I think it's the conversation is only going to continue at this point. BLM is still on the court. Players are still using their post-game press conferences to push, make sure that people are aware of issues. And I'm sure, we've been seeing more kind of police aggression than ever. And I would be surprised if we make it through the end of the playoffs without another kind of inflammatory event in which someone is most likely unreasonably attacked or injured. And so I think this is only going to provide more opportunity for more conversation and things like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, so this season is we are in the sort of waning days of the playoffs here, heading into the Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, and the finals themselves. But the NBA, their next season is set to restart or to start up in a couple months, or actually less than that, really. And there's no way that this does not carry over into their contract negotiated for next year. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that we will see a lot more concessions on the part of management and sponsors towards the demands that are being made by players. And it is, of course, it's not only the NBA. We also, you saw the NFL as their preseason, as their season got going, teams walked out of practice and basically did their own wildcat strikes to basically draw awareness and to demand discussions around the Black Lives Matter movement. On the first game of the NFL regular season, there was a show of unity between the reigning champs, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Houston Texans. And, you know, unsurprisingly, that moment drew jeers and boos from the people in the stands. But I think, again, these players use their platform to bring these issues, you know,
to the forefront,
as workers into their workplace, and that also then brought it to the forefront of our cultural, you know, moment. So it will be interesting to see where this goes. I think I'll just quote Dave Zirin one more time from The Nation. He wrote that in the absence of a lead from the broader labor movement, these athletes have been left operating in a vacuum, trying to wrest concessions from ownership and to join the struggle for Black lives. And so I think just that idea is that, or the idea that the labor, you know, these players did this on their own. They were not co-opted to do it by, you know, the AFL-CIO or anything. And it is now up to the leaders of the labor movement in this country to pick up where they went on, to support these guys and to pick up the ball where they then set it down for them, and really just push this forward and push labor's role in changing politics in this country. We, as always, are out of time. This is a discussion that we are no doubt going to see again. We'll bring up again in the, you know, future episodes. We will be back on in October, the third Monday in October. We will be coming to you then, and thank you for listening. I, of course, have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gillan.
If you're interested in continuing this conversation, you can find me on Twitter at Michael B. Cath, or you can go to kboo.org, and don't forget to support our station and go to kboo.org/give. Have a great night. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Crossing Boundaries, Virtual Fishing Derby and Auction. From